This is Into the Unknown, written by Kaluna Bulgari, read by Mistborn Hero, a Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom podfic, rated for explicit audiences, featuring the relationship Ganondorf, Link, Zelda, and Link, Zelda. It is tagged for canon divergence, arranged marriage, political alliances, mute Link, threesome, explicit sexual content, size difference. Author notes: I set out to write a Tears of the Kingdom-centric political marriage AU based on fan art by S. Kinawi, which features Zelda and Ganondorf on top of her, and it's glowing, and I'll just link it in the notes. But anyway, it has the caption, "I need a political marriage fanfiction in the TOTK universe with these two. I'd imagine that Zelda, despite trying, doesn't change anything what's to come." So, it was going to be extremely hot and incredibly angsty, because as mentioned in the tweet, despite Zelda trying, she doesn't manage to change anything that's to come. Instead, what I wrote was a vaguely canon-divergent AU that is clearly Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom inspired, but isn't technically either of those things. Some world-building facts. Heavily inspired by both games, but in a very hand-wavy sort of way, it is in the past since Ganondorf is there, or has Ganondorf inexplicably been moved forward into Breath of the Wild timeline, which changes just about everything, or is it in fact set in a completely different Hyrule? Only you can decide. Both Zelda and Link are the ages they were implied to be in Tears of the Kingdom, so somewhere in early 20s, this is spicy, everyone is of age, and consenting. 3. Yes, this is a political marriage, but it is also a political marriage where Zelda and Link are absolutely in love with each other, and Ganondorf isn't fussy about adding an extra person to their bed. Zelda's first thought when she meets her betrothed is not charitable, to say the least. Ganondorf is many things. Through the years, she's heard much talk of him from her father and his council, that he's vulgar, sly, not to be trusted, that he's the size of a boar and just as dim-witted, that he's more beast than man, with a temper to match. In reality, Ganondorf may be all of those things, or he may be none of them. She knows better than to trust castle gossip, but upon meeting him, she knows that at least one thing is for certain. The comments about his size, at the very least, were not an exaggeration. Zelda is on a daze when his retinue arrives, fidgeting anxiously several places behind her father. It is only proper, but she wants to be elsewhere, wants to be hiding away in her study where no one can find her, or better yet, in a meadow far from here, thinking of nothing but grass and sky and flowers. Instead, she is here, meeting the person that she will be marrying in a fortnight for the very first time. Link is a solid, quiet presence at her back. Zelda may not have liked him much when he was first assigned to her, but through the years, they've become something like friends. She would have hated to be standing here with any guard but him in tow. Even now, his presence gives her strength. When she chances a glance over her shoulder towards him as the door begins to swing open, Link blinks the placid expression from his face and offers her a quick, reassuring smile. She swallows hard, offering him a tentative smile of her own, and tries not to wince. This is what's always been expected of her. One day she may be queen, but she was always destined for a political marriage. If it wasn't Ganondorf, it would be someone else. Princesses, she thinks ruefully, aren't allowed to choose. She turns back towards the front of the room, spine straightening just as the first of Gerudo step into the throne room. At first, there is nothing but Ganondorf's women, an elite force of warriors, all equally tall and intimidating. Their bodies are hard, their training evident in the cut of their abs, the clear strength of their biceps. She watches as each of them passes into the hall, every one of them more lovely than the last, until, finally, the doors creak open wider, and the room goes still. Her breath catches in her throat when she sees him. Ganondorf is enormous, well over 7 feet tall and thick with heavy corded muscle, the bulk of him great enough that in the months prior to his arrival, the castle staff had seriously considered widening several doorways around the castle, and while she is glad to know that he is able to fit through their doorways without issue, his size is intimidating. His hair is swept up into a glinting gold crown, the color a deep russet red that is several shades darker than the rest of his skin. He is bare from the waist up, his naked torso heavily adorned, golden hoops in his earlobes, a heavy-looking necklace of gold and ruby draped around his throat. Delicate chains link the neckpiece to golden cuffs, squeezed tight around his biceps, and then, even further down, another pair of arm guards that run from forearm to wrist. There is, even, she realizes, her face going red, a pair of simple golden hoops through two brown nipples. They glint back at her in the afternoon light, mocking. Selva, who had missed the first of the introductions during her inspection of her betrothed, blinks hard, head jerking up when she hears her own name echoing through the chamber. She turns toward her father, who is looking at her expectantly. She has no idea what he said, but she can guess. She clears her throat, stepping forward until she is at the very edge of the dais. Her eyes find Ganondorf's. His eyes are warm, gold. There is intelligence there, as slyness and cunning, yes, but even as the force of his gaze holds her in place, she recognizes something more there. A challenge, the potential for cruelty, perhaps. It will be a game, she thinks, looking at him. He will do his duty. He will wed her and unite their peoples, even swear fealty to Hyrule. And yet, she is somehow sure that he will spend the rest of their lives testing her, looking for cracks in her armor, waiting and watching for a chance to usurp her throne. She watches as he goes down to one knee before her, and finds her mouth wet as he reaches for her hand, saliva pooling against her tongue. Suddenly, she is very aware of everything. Her father beside her, Link at her back, Ganondorf's kinsman watching her with a careful blankness, masking her curiosity. There are wolves in the castle and they are hungry.
Hello, Princess Selva, he says, mouth quirking upwards into something that's more a smirk than a smile. His voice is warm, smooth like liquid honey.
Ganondorf, she makes herself say, willing her voice not to waver as she gives an estimation of a curtsy. It isn't quite proper, but it is within the polite boundaries of etiquette. No one will be able to fuss. Her smile grows as his gaze flicks over her right shoulder, to where she knows Link is standing. She cannot allow herself to look,
but she can guess that Link is likely standing there, his face carefully blank, the perfect soldier. She wonders what drew Ganondorf's attention, a tightening of Link's fingers around the hilt of his sword, a flicker of an expression around his mouth. Whatever it is, Link holds Ganondorf's attention for several long moments. Zelda can feel her hand begin to sweat against Ganondorf's palm and longs to withdraw it. Then, Ganondorf's smile goes a touch crooked, showing teeth and still holding Link's gaze. He tugs and presses his lips to her knuckles. Only then does he return his gaze to hers.
"It is a pleasure to make your acquaintance," Ganondorf tells her, releasing her hand at last.
Zelda can feel the burn of his lips against her skin, warmth blossoming outwards, sending seeking trendles crawling down her wrist. She has to fight the urge to hide her hands behind her skirts. She swallows again and makes herself smile, even as a shiver runs through her.
"The pleasure is all mine."
They are released some 3 hours later, after her father and Ganondorf have finished discussing the new trade routes that will blossom from this union. Zelda fights a panicky feeling in her gut as they stride down the hallways towards her rooms, every step seeming too loud against the flagstone. Link doesn't say anything, doesn't look at her, doesn't touch her until the door has closed behind them. People will talk if she makes a habit of this, she thinks, collapsing backwards against her door and sinking slowly to the floor, burying her face in her hands. It's been beaten into her head since she was a child that if she is to be behind closed doors with any of her guard, there must be more than one of them present, any less, and there could be uncomfortable questions. But Link is there. Just Link, his hands already reaching for her. The court need not worry about her virtue, because Link has never taken her into his arms, at least not in the way that she wanted him to. He has touched her, though. That isn't exactly proper, either, but it is something easily overlooked. His hand, gentle on her shoulder, a tentative touch to the wrist, a protective arm around her waist, once, and only once, when the monsters set upon them. She had burned for that touch in the weeks after. Now he touches her gently, grasping her hands in his and pulling them from her face. When she looks at him, he is looking back, his eyes steady, maybe a little sad. "I'm sorry," she tells him, not sure what she is sorry for. She isn't crying, but every inch of her is aching, like she's been running for miles. The tension in her frame that's been building ever since Ganondorf entered the throne room by leaving her all at once. She is tired and overwhelmed and is willing to admit that she doesn't actually wish to marry anyone except the man in front of her. He shakes his head, smiling at her. "It's okay," he signs. "Don't apologize." She sighs, pulling her knees up to her chest and crossing her arms over top them. She settles her cheek against her form, looking at him sideways, and makes a face. "What do you think my chances are of getting out of dinner tonight?" He snorts, which she figures is answer enough. "Are you okay?" Link asks her, looking unsure. She groans, turning her face down into her skirt. She wants to scream, wants to tell him no, wants to tell him to take her away from here, where she doesn't have to be the princess, doesn't have to be the queen.
They could have a life together, she thinks, and is immediately ashamed at the thought. No, she finally says, looking back at him. But I'm sure I will be. She heaves out another great sigh, pushing slowly to her feet. Dinner is, perhaps, an hour and a half away, the sun already sinking lower in the horizon. She will have to bathe and dress for such an occasion, and already knows that because of the opulence of Ganondorf's attire, her household staff will want to dress her in the finest silks, the prettiest of gems. Already, there's likely a harried seamstress rushing to make her wedding dress even more grand. She gives Link a smile, straightens her spine, and, with him dodging her steps, she goes to find Impa. Dinner is a rushed affair. The cooks had served a lovely spread fit for any feast. Everything from roasted quail to persimmons simmered in a sweet cream sauce, but they had also made the mistake of serving boar. She hadn't needed to see the downturned corners of Ganondorf's mouth to know that he had heard the slight. The days that follow are busy. Wedding preparations are in full swing, and she spends each day on her feet from sunrise to sunset, if she isn't being fitted again, and again, for each equally exhausting iteration of her dress. She is being summoned to the kitchens for her opinion on some of the concoction for the feast. She supposes it is sweet that they want her approval, but it is so suffocating that she could scream. She doesn't see Ganondorf often. He is typically sequestered away with her father and the council, bickering over terms like she's some prized mare. When she does actually see him, though, he is always smiling, his eyes watching her, watching Link next to her. It is unnerving, and she says so one night, when it is just her and Link. They are in her study, and she's been attempting to draft a letter for 20 minutes, while he leans against a wall nearby, occasionally nudging whenever she takes a breath. The door is open, just slightly. When she mentions it, he hesitates, and she blinks, turning to look at him properly. "So you've noticed it, too?" she asks, words spilling out too fast. He hesitates for another moment, and then hesitantly nods. He stares, Link signs. "At you, mostly, but sometimes at me." Zelda feels a frisson of concern that perhaps Ganondorf had guessed at her secret, that somehow he's seen into her heart. She gnaws her lip raw, turning it over again and again in her head. "Do you think he's planning something?" she asks. Link shrugs. "Maybe." "Not helpful," she huffs, turning back to her letter, and scowls at it for a moment before she crumples it into a ball and starts anew. She feels a touch, gentle, tentative, between her shoulder blades, and turns to look at Link, who has drawn closer. He has that face again, the concerned one that makes her heart swell and his eyes tender as he looks at her. "Hey," he says. "It's okay. I watch him too." She smiles at him. The day before the wedding, she runs into Ganondorf in the palace gardens. It is a lovely morning in the heat of the sun, a warm balm against her bare shoulders after the early morning chill from the castle corridors.
Zelda's always loved the gardens, lush and green, the air heavily perfumed from exotic collections of blooms. There is a bench amongst the roses, blooms on either side, and ivy on the trails above. It is her favorite place in the castle, a little sliver of peace just for her. It is here that she finds him, stumbling to a stop when she rounds the bend and discovers someone else sitting in her bench. There's something almost peaceful about Ganondorf here, sequestered away from the rest of the court. He is dressed simply, still bare from the waist up, which she's quickly realizing may just be their custom, with a pair of silken white trousers of a similar fashion to what his warriors wear, clinging to his thighs. The gold is missing. Gone is the intricate chest piece, the ruby encrusted crown, the golden hoops. His nipples, when she risks a glance, are bare as well. He looks sleepy, creases from his pillow still across his cheek. There's something else missing, she notices, watching him, attention that she hadn't even noticed until she had found it gone, is missing from his frame. His shoulders loose as he watches a pair of rabbits bicker over the seat that she's somehow sure he just tossed to them. Her mouth goes a bit dry, and she wonders for a moment if this is a trick, if he's arranged to have this moment of seeming vulnerability on display for her, a gesture to throw her off guard. She shakes the thought from her head. It may well be true, but if she spends her every waking moment searching for a trick, then she'll go mad within the year. He hasn't noticed her yet. She could leave. The guard at her back isn't even Link. It is one of the newer ones, green enough that he should probably be accompanied by a more senior knight. If Ganondorf chose to do something to her, she's willing to bet that her guard wouldn't be able to do a damn thing. She takes a careful breath and steps forward, crossing the space between them to take a careful seat on the bench next to him. Ganondorf blinks, turning to peer down at her curiously. His eyes go to her guard, who Zelda is sure is having a minor crisis of faith, then back to her. His lips quirk. His voice, when it comes, isn't as smooth as it was before. It isn't the rich, cultured thing that he uses amongst crowds, but something softer, gravelly from disuse.
"Good morning, princess,"
Ganondorf tells her, still smiling.
"That isn't your usual guard."
"No," she tells him, and leaves it at that. He hums thoughtfully, his eyes going to the guard again, and for a moment she thinks that he may press the matter, as if it is any of his business where Link may be, but after another moment he drops it, leaving with a polite nod. They watch the birds in silence for some time. Ganondorf, as it turns out, has a bag of feed with him, which he offers her when the robins have finished what's on the ground and turn to eye them expectantly. She dips her hand into the bag, delighting in the cool press of seeds against her knuckles, and comes out with a palmful, which she gently tosses to the grateful birds. As she watches, a few more descend.
"Do you come here often?"
Ganondorf asks as she brushes the lingering kernels from her hands. She looks at him, wondering if she should say, if he does mean her any harm, this place that she only comes to when she means to be alone would be a delightful place for any would-be kidnapper. But, on the other hand, if he is to be her husband, he will learn soon enough. "Yes," she tells him, reaching to brush her knuckles across the rose nearest to her. The last few drops of morning dew
clinging to the downy softness of its petals. I love this place.
It is lovely, he says. Quiet, peaceful. I was happy to find a place to myself.
She turns to look at him, curious despite herself. Do you have a place like it, back home? Ganondorf is still watching the birds, but as she speaks, he turns to her, his expression soft.
I do, he says, sounding pleased. We have orange trees growing in what passes for our garden. They grow in a small alcove, tucked away from prying eyes. There is a fountain there. It is peaceful.
He seems to hesitate.
They smell divine when they are in bloom. Perhaps one day I can show you.
Perhaps, she replies for politeness' sake. She is her father's only heir. He would never let her venture out into the desert, not even if she had all the guards in Hyrule with her. Perhaps, she thinks, when she is queen, if her husband has not attempted a coup by then. They have drawn an entire flock by now, not only robins but jays and turtle doves. They bicker amongst themselves for the seed. They chatter light and easy. She only wishes that her entire day could be this quiet.
Are you looking forward to the feast tonight? She asks, only half listening, as she watches one of the larger jays wallop one of the doves with its wing.
I never look forward to feasts, Ganondorf tells her, gravely, which surprises her enough that she lets out a sharp bark of laughter. When she's done laughing, she looks at him, tears in her eyes, and confesses,
Neither do I.
Dancing is not, strictly speaking, required at feasts. People do dance, if only because that is the natural progression of a night of merriment and laughter, but it has never, ever been required or expected of her. Until, of course, tonight. She should have realized that something untoward was going on when they had put her in a dress of red silks instead of the more conservative and traditional choices. Zelda is used to blues, whites, creams, even the occasional green. She is decidedly not accustomed to being stuffed into silks, red as blood, or being draped in jewelry heavily favoring rubies. They had put her in Ganondorf's colors, and she had thought it a little odd, but hadn't batted a lash at it. She should have questioned it. Dinner often leaves her drowsy, the music too loud, the wine too much in her stuffed belly, so the first time that her father calls her name, she doesn't hear him. The second time she hears him, because the music stops. She turns to him, surprised, and he is smiling at her, but it isn't his usual smile. It is his smile that means that he wants her to do something for him that he already knows she isn't going to want to do. And sure enough, the words out of his mouth make her frown. I said, he tells her, perfectly audible to all those around them, don't you want to start dancing with your betrothed? She goes still, already looking to Ganondorf, who is sitting just to her father's left. To his credit, he is doing a much better job than she is at hiding his disdain for the idea. There is a placid smile on his lips, and even though her father isn't looking at him, he is already nodding, as if he's already resigned himself to the idea. His eyes meet hers, and as she watches, he lets his lips twitch into something a little more sardonic. He tips his head to her, eyebrow quirking as if to say, don't you? She decidedly does not. In fact, she would rather eat another 3 plates of summer beans, which she hates, than start the dancing. But she makes herself a smile, pushing to her feet. She can feel Link's eyes on her as she stands. Ganondorf stands too, rising to his feet altogether too gracefully for someone as large as he is. He steps towards her, gallantly offering her his arm, and she takes it, reluctantly, already feeling the heat radiate of him. She must look comically small next to him. This close, it is abundantly clear that not only is he large, but he is quite literally twice her size. It gives them some pause, drawing to a stop in the middle of the room, only to realize they aren't quite sure how they fit together. At the dais, she had already been standing some 2 feet above him. Like this, she would need heels that are twice the size of the ones she's wearing to properly put an arm around his shoulder. She's certain that he could lift her and waltz her about the room, but the indignity of such a thing would ruin all the goodwill he had earned this morning. They compromise, her settling one hand against his hip and placing the other against his waiting palm. His other hand settles warmly across her back and shoulders, gentle against her spine. They dance. It is quite difficult, but she is certain that it at least looks all right because her father is giving her a smile that means he is pleased.
Looking for your knight, princess?
Ganondorf whispers out of the corner of his mouth. He doesn't duck his head towards her, but there is a barely noticeable tilt to his head that means he wants to, that he wants his lips pressed right up against her ear, where he can speak truly only to her. The whisper, she thinks, will have to suffice.
I don't know what you are talking about, she whispers back, her eyes finding Link's even as the words leave her mouth. He is watching them, but there is a faint crack in his mask, a flash of pain bare on his face for all of Hyrule to see before he catches her looking and schools it into a careful blankness once more. Ganondorf chuckles, a warm rumble that she can feel through her entire body, from head to toes.
Of course you don't,
he tells her, something faintly mocking in his voice. It makes her hackles go up, spine straightening, as she lifts her head to look at him. He is looking down at her now, and on his lips is a smile that she hadn't seen from him yet. It isn't the soft, private smile from this morning, nor is it the polite smile that he gives her father and the rest of the court. This is a strange smile, just for her, and it appears entirely genuine.
Are you mocking me, sir?
She asks him.
Perhaps,
he tells her, unexpectedly, lifting her into a spin. She reels, a bit dizzy, when he sets her back down onto her feet. He smiles again, as if he is laughing at her, and ducks his head to whisper in her ear.
Is it working?
She blinks hard, finding Link over his shoulder again.
Is what working?
She can feel his smile against her ear, the feel of it curving upwards. She shivers. His lips move against her ear, his breath warm against her throat.
Am I making him jealous?
She flinches, not hard but just enough to make her miss a step. She corrects herself, but people have already seen. There will be whispers, rumors. She huffs and looks away from him, careful to keep her gaze away from Link.
I told you, she says coolly. I don't know what you are talking about.
He laughs again, but obligingly straightens, taking his mouth far out of her reach. They dance in silence until the music stops. That night, Link sees her to her doors and no further. She is aware of the boundary in a way that she was not before. Would he have followed her over the threshold into her room, as he's done time and time again, if she hadn't danced with Ganondorf tonight? Is this a new restriction that he's imposed upon himself, or has someone noticed? "Are you all right?" He signs, movement rapid fire, as if he's given into the temptation of asking. She gives him a careful smile, her palm flat against the door, already swinging it shut, and shakes her head. The door closes between them. The day of the wedding dawns bright and early. Her maids fuss as they usher her into the bath of Mary's milk and rose petals. They fuss as they make her take her breakfast of fruits and porridge, as she is still soaking in the tepid waters. They fuss as they comb and style her hair from a sopping, stinky mess to silken golden curls, and then they fuss more still as they bustle her into her gown. The gown is heavy, too opulent, heavy with gold and sapphires, layer upon layer of itchy skirts to tangle with her legs. It is 3:30 when Impa steps into the room, takes one look at her, and makes them all leave. It is quiet, after only the click of Impa's heels on the stone as she crosses the room towards her. Impa goes to one knee before her, tipping her head so she can better peer into the curtain of hair that Zelda is hiding behind. "Are you all right, princess?" she asks, her voice so very careful. "You look miserable." Zelda bursts into tears. She doesn't tell Impa everything, but she tells her close to it. When she's done, Impa looks at her and sighs, reaching to stroke the tears from Zelda's cheeks. "Oh, my girl," she says, pulling Zelda into a warm hug. "I can't fix everything, but I can fix some of it." She finds a different dress, an earlier iteration, Zelda thinks. This dress is simple, a modified version of the one that they had meant her to wear to find the goddess. It is lovely, the fabric light and soft, the skirt cascading to her ankles as her shoulders lay bare. There's a golden belt for her waist and teardrops of sapphire and emerald for her neck and ears. There is a crown, but it is not the gaudy thing they had meant her to wear. It is a little more than a stylized band of gold across her brow, a single sapphire in the very middle. Zelda looks at herself in the mirror and recognizes the woman staring back at her. She hadn't before. She takes Impa's hands in hers and squeezes. "Thank you," she whispers, wiping one last tear from her cheeks. Impa smiles back at her. "I have one last gift for you." She leaves the room, and moments later, Link is there. Zelda recognizes Impa's hands as they gently nudge Link into the room. "I'll watch the door," she tells them both, and the door clicks shut behind her, leaving them in silence. Link is looking at her. There is a muted agony on his face, the mask fully off, pain in his eyes as they find hers. "Oh," she says, taking a step towards him. She catches his hand in hers. "You..." Link shakes his head furiously, ripping his hand from hers, and for the first time she realizes that he's shaking. He tries to sign, but his hands are moving too quickly for her to read, and after several minutes of trying, he gives up, shoulders quaking. He isn't looking at her anymore. He is looking at the floor, the walls, the ceiling, everything but her. She takes another step towards him, tries for his hand again. This time, he lets her catch it. "Link," she breathes. "Don't," she catches, Link signing rapidly, still refusing to look at her. A pause and he composes himself and then... It's too hard. Link, she says. Then, please. He looks at her. There are tears in his eyes. You look lovely, he tells her. She kisses him. It is not what she's always dreamed of, not sweet kisses in a meadow, or that life they'd never gotten to live if they had run away together. It is wet, both of their cheeks sticky with tears. His mouth moves against hers, his shoulders going loose as his hands find her waist and for a moment she hopes. He jerks away from hers, eyes shiny and too bright. She's hurt him more, she realizes, watching as he stands before her and shakes. May I go? He asks her, his eyes wooden, fingers jerky, stilted. Zelda swallows, more tears gathering at the corners of her eyes. There is a lump in her throat and she can't speak around it, so she nods instead and watches him take his leave.
The ceremony passes quickly. She doesn't notice half of it, drifting along its wake like a ghost. She remembers looking for Link, only finding him as she came to a stop at the altar. He hadn't looked at her. Ganondorf had been looking at her, she remembers, with some concern. Words happened. She's mostly sure that she had said the right ones when asked, and when it had come time to kiss her, Ganondorf had done it quickly, his lips a dry rasp against hers. Then it was done. She remembers little of her dinner, only that there had not been pork. Her gut is a cramped, knotted thing in her gut as they ascend the stairs towards her rooms afterwards, dread curling in her belly. She can feel Ganondorf at her back, a huge looming presence in the dark. The candle that they had given her when they had sent her off afterwards, the only light in the corridor. She does her best to keep her breathing even when they reach the door to her room, but doesn't think she quite manages it, some of her fear escaping. Ganondorf is still and quiet, waiting patiently as her shaking fingers fumble the door open. Behind him, Link waits, his expression a blank mask. He doesn't meet her eyes. Once this would have been a public spectacle. A council would have gathered in the hall as the servants dragged a bed into the middle of the room, and they would have watched him bed her. Faces blank or jeering, depending on when the wedding occurred. They had sold tickets, once, she remembers, and feels a stab of sympathy for the queens and princesses of old. She can't imagine the humiliation, the pain. The door opens, and they stand in the threshold for a moment, breathing deeply. A hand touches her elbow, and she flinches, expecting Link. But when she turns, it is Ganondorf. He is looking at her, seriously, his heavy brows knitted. There's no calculating or cruelty on that face, only understanding.
Wife,
he said, and that's a little stab of agony as well, knowing that it is done, knowing that she is as good as shackled to the man next to her.
We don't have to do it tonight.
Her head jerks up, mouth parting. She had expected cruelty, she realizes, looking into his eyes. Never in her wildest imaginings had she thought that Ganondorf could be kind. It is a sweet offer, but a barbed one as well. Even if she were to put the night off, how long would he wait? A week? A month? Years? What if she never wished to bed him? Would he allow that, or would he go to her father and declare the marriage contract null? No, better to get this over with. Zelda swallows and shakes her head. Her eyes go to Link, standing just to the left of Ganondorf. His face is like stone, still refusing to look at her. He will hold vigil here at the door. He will... here. She's known that all along, but now it is like an arrow to her gut, and she shouldn't have kissed him. There's a soft sound in the hallway, a quick inhalation, and her eyes go to Ganondorf, who is looking down at her with something like a realization, a knowing, even a soft smugness.
Oh,
Ganondorf says, voice thick with understanding. Her heart drops as Ganondorf looks between them, face creased.
It is like that, then. I had wondered.
Link doesn't look up at either of them, his jaw merely tightening as he stands straight under Ganondorf's gaze. Ganondorf laughs, a soft thing, colored with amusement as he leans back against the door to her rooms. Light from Selva's candles glints off his crown, off the plate of gold laid over his chest. He is still looking between them. He says, once he's finished laughing, reaching for Selva's hand. She gives it to him, her heart hammering in her chest, and sucks in a quiet breath when he steps forward and gently draws her over the threshold to her rooms. He takes the candle from her, settling it into the waiting sconce, and looks back over his shoulder at Link, who is still stone-faced and silent at the door. He quirks an eyebrow at him.
Well, aren't you coming?
Shock explodes across Link's face, blue eyes going wide as a ruddy blush instantly colors his cheeks. His mouth drops, lips parting as a huff of surprise leaves him. He stares at Ganondorf open-mouthed, and the emotion bleeding back into him all at once. He glances towards Selva, as if looking to confirm what he's just seen. Selva, who finds that her mouth is also open, only shakes her head in disbelief. Link's eyes go back to Ganondorf, only to dart away, again, skittish. Ganondorf chuckles again, stepping forward until he is once again looming in the doorway. He cocks his head, as if curious, eyes running up and down Link's body, heavy with intent.
I will admit,
Ganondorf tells him, the same strange smile playing around his lips as he reaches out, brushing a wayward curl from Link's face.
It's been some time since I had a boy in my bed, but having the both of you won't be such a hardship.
He casts a glance over his shoulder towards her, even as his palm slides to cup Link's cheek, an almost proprietary grip, his thumb coming to rest at the corner of Link's mouth. She's choked to realize that she wants to see what would happen if Link opened his mouth and sucked it in. Ganondorf must see something of her thoughts on her face, because he laughs again, louder, a rumble deep within his chest.
What do you think, princess?
Ganondorf asks, cocking his head. His smile is wide, knowing.
Would having your young knight here with us make the marriage bed more palatable?
Selva swallows, her eyes again finding Link's. He looks unsure, disbelieving, but not, she notices, particularly disgusted. He isn't objecting, isn't cringing from her gaze or Ganondorf's touch. She cannot give voice to it, cannot answer Ganondorf's question. Nor does it seem she has to, because Ganondorf takes one look at her face and his smile widens, growing like a fault line. His grip on Link drops lower, and for a moment she thinks that he is going to do something outlandish, like pick Link up and carry him over the threshold. But his hand only drops as far as Link's waist, using the grip to nudge him inside. Link doesn't need much direction, stumbling across the room to her side. They exchange one quick glance as Ganondorf bars the door behind them, and then Ganondorf is turning to face them. He looks larger here, somehow, now that he is in her space. His smile is different now, smugger, like an alley cat who's managed to dip its whispers into the last of the cream. Her heart gives an uneven thump as he steps towards them, and for a moment, she doesn't know what she wants him to do.
So,
he says, turning to Link,
have you ever bet her before?
Link flinches like he's been kicked. Ganondorf snorts, leaning back against the closed door and regarding them with hooded eyes.
That's a no, then. A kiss?
This time he looks to Selva for the answer, as if he knows, and Selva lifts her chin and stares back at him, refusing to be shamed. He smiles back at her, delighted, and says,
"We can work with that, princess, if you'd be so kind. Kiss him again."
She stares back at him, her spine ramrod straight. He's having fun with this, she realizes. His eyes glimmer with mirth as he pushes forward off the door and crosses the room towards them. He reaches their sides in not three steps. He looks at her, eyes hot, and licks his lips.
Do you perhaps need a demonstration?
When she doesn't answer, he hums once, still so amused, and lifts a hand back to Link's face. When Link doesn't protest the touch, he smiles, asks,
"May I?"
Link blinks, which must be enough of an answer, because Ganondorf wraps a hand around Link's waist and hauls him up into a hard kiss. Link makes a small, shocked sound against his lips, mouth parting, and Ganondorf takes that opportunity to deepen the kiss, fisting a hand in Link's hair to hold him still. It is the best sort of agony to watch, not sure if she wants to be closer or further away, the one kissing or the one being kissed. As she watches, Ganondorf tips Link's head back further, ducking away from his mouth to better suck a bruise into the hollow of his throat, just where his tunic gapes. Link makes another little sound and squirms. Ganondorf pulls back after several long moments of this, but he doesn't go far. In his arms, Link is already well on his way to debauched, his mouth keys bruised, his hair in disarray, his tunic pushed half up his waist by Ganondorf's questing hands. Ganondorf looks at Zelda, quirking his lips as if to say, "Well?" A game, she thinks. That's what she had known this marriage would be, politics and ulterior motives. She's known that she would have to be prepared for anything, and here she had offered up her weakness on a silver platter. He had her now. Link would be a weapon wielded against her, even if he didn't know it. She bites her lip hard, tastes her own blood, and steps in close to the cage of Ganondorf's arms. Link is watching her, his eyes a little hazy, and when she reaches out for him this time, she doesn't let herself waver. She takes his so beloved face in her hands and kisses him, long and deep. She can feel Ganondorf against her back, the bulk of him nearer than he's ever been before. His hand lands on her waist, and she doesn't let herself jump, just kisses Link harder as Ganondorf unfastens the lacings at her back, the ones that Impa had so painstakingly done up just a few hours ago. She feels the cool air on her back and pulls back from Link long enough to help Ganondorf work the dress off her, and then she is gathering him close again, kissing him and kissing him, even as Ganondorf touches her, reaching between them to cup one of her breasts in his huge palm. She sucks in a breath, shuddering, and Link lets out a quiet noise. She looks at him. He is all eyes, so pretty as they crawl up and down her body, a sort of awe there as he looks at her,
She wonders what he sees, the soft stomach, the strong thighs, the firm breasts. She wonders if her body is what he's imagined, and then, immediately following that thought, desperately wants to know if his body is what she's imagined. She undresses him quickly, sword first, then shield, tunic, trousers. He looks good naked, lean and golden. Perfect. Ganondorf huffs a breath against her ear.
Such appetites, princess. You have good taste.
She narrows her eyes, turning to look at him over her shoulder. He is still grinning as she watches, his eyes deep to look at her. Really look at her for the first time, and she can see when it stops being a joke to him, when he starts wanting her properly. He growls under his breath, and she's already stepping towards him when he reaches to crush her to him. The kiss is hard, all teeth and tongue, nothing like the sweet press of Lynx had been. He bites at her mouth and soothes with a swipe of his tongue afterwards, and not to be outdone, she bites him back, harder, until she tastes blood in her mouth, until he is laughing. His hand comes up to grip her thighs, and he lifts her like she weighs nothing, walking them blindly towards the bed as her legs lock tight around his waist. He is so big, too big, and she can't even get her legs around his waist completely, has to dig her heels into his hips to keep from falling. He is still laughing at her when they hit the bed, and she wants... She can feel the heavy jut of his cock against her thigh, knows without seeing it that it is just as large as the rest of him, and she still wants it inside her, somewhat recklessly. She almost asks for it, almost makes him put it in her there and then, but she wants Link, and she doesn't know where he's gone. She breaks the kiss, as if she's coming up from water, and jerks her head to where they left Link, sure that he's left the room, that he's abandoned her to weather this on her own. But he hasn't left her. He's come with them, hovering just within reach, his eyes heavy on her body, the jut of her lips, the swell of her thighs. "Link," she says, her voice hoarse, and the first word she's really said since she said her bows before all of Hyrule. His eyes go to her, and he smiles, so sweetly, reaching out to touch her, like she's always wanted him to. He cups her cheek, and leans in to kiss her, and it is perfect, so perfect, that she aches for it, aches for him.
"Would you like to have him first, then?"
Ganondorf asks her, a low whisper in her ear, and her legs clench tight around him, making them both groan as his cock jostles between them. "Please," she says, and he makes a sound like a laugh, and pulls back, away, moving them so that he's propped up against the headboard, and she's reclined against his front, her back hot where their skin touches. Ganondorf makes an amused sound when Link hesitates, and his hands take hold of her hips and, mortifyingly, spread her legs open.
"Do you need me to tell you where it goes?"
Ganondorf asks, almost conversationally, and Link narrows his eyes. It is not. There was a moment when she was younger, when she had thought of this, of what would happen if she could just take what she wanted, if she could have Link on his back in the hay of the palace stable, or if he'd ever bear her down into her fragrant grass of Hyrule field. It was a silly dream, a girl's dream. She had never imagined this, her husband holding her open as Link pushes into her. But perhaps that was a good thing. She had been an excitable girl. He makes a noise when he first pushes into her that she'll remember forever, even if they never get to do this again. A slight hitch in his breathing, like a hiccup, then a moan, so soft it is almost a whine. They are green, untested, so very new to this.
She's wanted this for so long and so hard, and it doesn't even hurt. The rhythm is rocky and awkward when they start, but Ganondorf helps them find it quickly, his hands reaching out to steady Link's hips, coaxing him into a better pace. It is perfect, even if it wasn't what she had dreamed. She gets to bury her face in his neck the way she had wanted then, gets to hitch her legs up around his hips and clench him tighter, deeper, his fingers threaded with hers. But it is over too fast, and then her eyes are wet when he goes still inside her. It's too much, it's not enough. Ganondorf gives them a minute, lets her shake, lets Link breathe. She hadn't expected patience from him, but then there's a great many things about this night that she hadn't expected. Okay, she tells him when Link is collapsed backward beside them, watching with his eyes as Ganondorf turns her to face him. His cock is between them, hard against her belly, and it is so big that for a moment she wonders if she's ready for it. She can feel Link's suspend licking the insides of her thighs and knows that Ganondorf can feel it too. She looks at Ganondorf, chin held high, and says, I'm ready. He is big. His cock inside of her is such a tight fit that her breathing goes ragged as he's fitting into her. She's sweating all over, and it is so much that she worries it will break her, that she'll never be the same again. Link had felt good inside of her, a perfect fit, no pain, just a free sense of pleasure up and down her spine as he moves inside of her, but this is nearly too much.
It's okay, princess,
Ganondorf tells her, patting her back once he's completely inside.
You did good.
She doesn't feel like she did good, doesn't feel like she did anything at all, but at his words, her breathing hitches, and the tension goes out of her a little. He holds her there as she adjusts, his hands touching her breasts, her hair, her mouth. He kisses her again, not hard like before, but softer, sweeter, as if he had seen what she was like with Link and is trying to imitate it best he can. Her eyes flutter open, going automatically to Link, who is still watching them with wide eyes. His wet lips parted. She holds out her hand to him and smiles when he catches it. Ganondorf fucks her slowly at first. It isn't like it was with Link, but it is good in its own way. She clenches her eyes tight, overwhelmed when each shock of muted pain steadies out into something bright, good. Please, she hears herself say at one point, her legs around Ganondorf's hips, knees digging into his ribs, urging him on. Please. She hadn't known it could be good like this, but it is. The pressure inside of her building and building as his control begins to fracture, as he starts to fuck her in earnest. He bears her back down onto the bed and ruts into her, and it is so good that she just breaks. Her mouth is open against his jaw when she comes back to herself, and Ganondorf presses deep into her and goes still, his cock giving a strange little throb inside her. Perfect, she thinks, as he falls off her. Perfect, she thinks, as Link presses in closer, gathering her close. She will have to figure out a way to make sure that Ganondorf doesn't use this against her. We'll have to figure out a way to keep this strange, perfect little thing a secret. Just the three of them. Later, though. The end. This has been recorded for ITPE 2023 as a gift for Kitsune Heart. I hope you've enjoyed listening to this. It is the longest work for your gift, so the other ones are much shorter. I think half this. But anyway, Zelda was the big fandom, and I did the tiny travel, and this one, which is OT3, because I like polyships, and also because I don't actually know that much about Zelda.
Like, I've played most of the games, or a lot of the games, not most of the games, there's way too many games, but you get it. But I mostly, like, skip the cutscenes, so I don't actually know what's going on ever. I just know, oh yeah, I have to go from here to here, and I have to pass this dungeon, and... yeah. So... Anyway... I hope you've enjoyed, and thank you for listening, and please remember to drink some water today.